So I'm delighted to announce that I'm joined in the studio this morning by the wonderful Orla McLaughlin. Orla is a nutritionist and she's passionate about paving the way of telling us what we should and what we shouldn't be eating. Orla, good morning and welcome to the studio.
Good morning, Shane. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great, thank you. It's wonderful. I always love having super talented people in here to educate us, help us and support us about what we should be doing correct. Orla, I'll leave you to it. Tell us your story.
Okay, so I guess my nutrition story started when I was younger. I guess I had a very, very normal childhood. I grew up in Donegal, grew up on a farm, was very, very aware of food, but was a very, very fussy eater. Like, mum could barely get me to eat anything. It was a very, very plain, plain eater. And vegetables were literally peas at a push. So I think I did a lot of sport. I was a very, very active kid and I was very aware of where my food came from. So my granny made all of her own bread and, you know, we got eggs and things like that from grannies as well and vegetables. So I was always very, very aware of that. But again, it was just kind of, you know, didn't really like to eat food as all was, you know. So I got, when I was younger, I guess the only kind of health concern that I had was I always got strep throat. I had sore throats constantly. So I was therefore on antibiotics a fair amount when I was younger. But never ever thought anything of that. And it's only when I started studying nutrition that I looked at retrospectively the health of my gut and how my gut had been set up from when I was very young. So just to kind of make that point. But then I went to school, went to college, and I did a commerce degree in Galway, and I did business and loved that, but again struggled a little bit with anxiety in college, struggled a lot with overwhelm, and struggled a little bit with my gut as well, but I hadn't been diagnosed with anything at that point. And then further down the line, then I went traveling, I went to Australia and all of that. And then when I came back from Australia, I still was a very fairly fussy eater and I started to then get quite sick. I went into the workforce, I started working in marketing and things like that. And I started to get quite sick in terms of, I had this thing that they called cyclical vomiting, when they had so many tests done and they couldn't really pinpoint what was causing it. So I had colonoscopies and endoscopies and all of these various different things and biopsies for celiac and everything. But what would randomly happen is I would get up at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I would throw up for a few times and then I'd go back to bed and I'd be fine. And I would do this on and off an awful lot. Couldn't figure out what foods. And at this time I had started studying nutrition. So I was in college as well. So the only thing that I could think of was it was a stress component, because I was quite stressed out. You know, everything was in the marketing world, everything was an awful lot more stressful. It had to be done yesterday kind of world. And I think that had a huge impact on my health. So I finished my nutrition and I then did a master's in nutrition, personalized nutrition, with Middlesex University. And it was only from extensively studying the health of the gut and the gut-brain connection that I realized that there was huge anxiety there, that there was huge stress levels there as well. And I also wasn't eating the right foods. So kind of doing a huge amount of work on myself and being able to figure the foods that suited me out, I was able then to change and make changes and make really good changes. But I think to this day, I still would struggle with that. If I know that I'm getting quite stressed out, it still would be a trigger for me. I still would throw up. I still would, you know, so I always have to be very, very careful about stress in terms of how it affects me. It affects my gut an awful lot. And they haven't been able to pinpoint exactly what it is. But I think for me, it's just looking at that stress response and if I can try and downplay that a little bit. And that has been hugely influential for me in terms of being able to help other people that have digestive issues. It would be a big area that I would study extensively in, because or that are doing an awful lot of work in, because so many people struggle with gut health. And I think it's one of those things that is so... it's so important. And if our gut is compromised, and if we feel crap, then our whole day is crap, you know. So it's looking at ways that you can try and make that a little bit better for yourself.
Okay, so how do you know if your gut isn't right?
Oh, so many different things. So you're looking at things like an imbalanced pattern. So you're looking at imbalanced bowel movement. So if you have either constipation, which is not moving your bowels every single day, or if you have the opposite of that, which is diarrhea, which you're moving your bowels in a looser motion an awful lot more frequently. You're also looking for signs and symptoms of things like when you eat food and your stomach swells out, you know, commonly known as bloating. So we would get that a huge amount. Also, you're looking at things like cramping, pain, all of those kind of things. But you can be looking at upper GI issues as well. So you're looking at reflux disorder, which is when you would kind of burp an awful lot, or you'd feel like food would repeat on you an awful lot, or those kind of things. Or you would get that heartburn sensation where things are actually burning in your chest. Those kind of things can be looking out for.
So I know now that there are people listening and they're saying, but you're, every time I have a big heavy meal, I get bloated.
Yes.
Like, that's just normal.
Yes. But I'm here to tell you it's not normal.
Okay.
So what should they do? So it's looking at the foods that trigger those things and try and pull back from those if you can at all possible. Because, you know, and this is why having done marketing in the past as well, that we're told all of these things in society. So we're told that we need to snack. We're told that just take Rennie, and we're told all of these things are normal. But that's not how the body functions very well. So again, it's looking at ways that you can do this in a healthier manner long term. So if you do struggle with things like that, look at the foods that you're eating, and look at also physiologically what's happening in your body. Are you physically sitting up when you're eating, or are you lying slumped down when you're eating as well? Or are you eating too late before you're going to bed? Because it takes us about 4 hours to digest a meal. So if you're having your dinner at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, and then you're going to bed at 10, you're lying horizontal. So things are going to, in that digestion process, things are going to start coming back up and causing an awful lot more reflux. So again, physically think about what's happening in your body as well, and give yourself the time and space. Those are just some small little things, but I would always ask people to look at what they're eating and connect that with how they feel. That's one of the biggest things that we don't do.
So 4 hours. So I'd want to be having my dinner at 6 o'clock, and then
yes,
being in bed at like 10 or 10:30.
Exactly. No, that's for a larger meal. Generally speaking, you can digest a good portion of that in 2 hours, but generally that's what we would say is like 4 hours for a larger meal.
Okay, so what do you see a lot of?
I see a lot of, well, I do a lot of work with kids that have autism and any kind of spectrum disorders and ADHD and things like that. So I'd see in that population, I would see a huge amount of compromised digestion. So I would see constipation. I would see what's known as megarectum, where there's huge impactation as well in the gut. And you're looking also then at maybe even the other side of that is diarrhea and things like that as well. So, but for in general with other adults, I would look at ulcerative colitis. I would look at Crohn's. I would look at IBS as a huge one. And IBS is kind of very prevalent in society today, because there is a huge stress trigger to that, and we live in a very stressful world, I think, as well. So they would be the biggest things that I would come across.
Okay, so how do we become healthier?
It's, for me, that is one of the hardest things to give an answer to specifically, because no two people are the same. So that's one of the biggest things that I get asked all of the time is, what's the perfect diet? What can we all eat? What can we do that'll get us to feel an awful lot better? But my response to that is always like, At the minute right now, figure out how you feel with the food that you eat. Do you have energy, adequate energy? Do you waken up feeling really, really, really sluggish? Do you waken up feeling alive and, you know, happy and loads of energy? Or do you struggle with digesting your every single meal? Do you feel bloated? Do you feel lethargic? Is your mood really, really low? Look at all of those components as subtle little biomarkers for yourself, and then see if you can start to change the diet. Generally speaking, the biggest culprit is sugar, and those things that convert to sugar very, very quickly in our body. So you're also looking at not just added sugar or table sugar, but you're looking at those quick carbohydrates. So pastries, cakes, sweets, all of those, but also things like white pasta, white rice, white bread. All of those things convert to sugar very, very quickly in our body. And if you're over consuming those, then you're creating a huge amount of havoc in your system as well. So look at that in proportion to everything else that you're eating as well.
Okay. On another question.
Yes.
What should we try and avoid more so?
So the biggest things that I would say to people to try and avoid, again, it will depend on what's going on for you physically. So if you're struggling with digestive issues, or if you're struggling with mental issues, I think one of the biggest things that I would say to people to try and avoid is sugar. We've always classically been told to avoid fat. But for me, the biggest thing is trying to avoid sugar. And that goes for all of those things like that I was just saying, those things that turn into sugar very, very quickly as well. It's okay. I'm not demonizing carbohydrates in terms of grain, but it is okay if you can try and reduce the portion for that. So make your carbohydrate portion a side salad as opposed to the main component of the meal. Make sure you have fats, make sure you have adequate protein, and make sure you have lots of veg, and then have your little bit of carbohydrate. Because we classically will present a plate of dinner that is a mound of spaghetti for pasta, and that's the carbohydrate, and then you'll have like a tiny bit of chicken fillet in there, and you'll have a tiny bit of sauce and a little bit of veg, and that's it, you know. Whereas if we can try and change that that plate pattern and just have a little bit more of the fats, more of the protein and less of the carbohydrates, you will see a huge difference in, number one, your ability to digest foods, and number two, your energy levels and mood.
Okay, it seems like every week I'm hearing a completely different story. Yes. About you do this right, you do yes. this wrong.
Yeah.
For example, 2 weeks ago, we had someone in here, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, I was interviewing a wonderful girl about being a vegan, right?
Right.
Now, I did try give up meat, you know, a good while ago, and it didn't work. I was physically sick, I was like, you know, tired, and I have to say, I do love a nice bit of meat with my dinner. I
yes.
like a nice steak, I like chicken, you know. I've tried to give it up.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. I was continuously full and it was just, I wasn't fulfilled. You know,
yes, 100%.
It just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So what is the right way and what is the wrong way?
So again, I would say it very much depends on what's going on for you. The biggest thing that I would say to people about health and about marketing is always think about the context. So we get these snippets of information. We get, like, 1 week it's like there's a research study done on coffee, the next it's carrots, the next it's apples, don't eat those, everything else. It's overwhelming and it's really, really hard to process all of that. So the biggest thing that I would say to people is try and think of the context, and you being the context in terms of your own environment. What can you tolerate? Yes, if you're vegan, absolutely fine. You need to be very, very aware of certain things as well, like definitely looking at B12 vitamin, definitely looking at things like vitamin D as well, if you need to supplement, particularly now coming into the winter. But I think it's really, really important to connect just how you feel with what you eat. And that can be a hard thing for people to do in terms of awareness. But there's no right or wrong. It depends on how you feel is probably my easiest answer to that. But for you, having given up meat and then feeling like you were really, really lethargic and things like that, you just probably tolerate meat that little bit better. But it's looking at ways that you can process that better if there's anything else kind of going on for you.
Okay.
But there's no, like, being, you can be a very unhealthy vegan as well. You know, so you can just literally have lots of carbohydrates. So it's looking at ways that you can make sure that you get
that. You've got to find the balance.
You have to find the balance. You have to make sure that you have the adequate proportion of protein, fats and carbs, you know, because I always think of it. I always say to people, it's like everyone has a car and everyone knows what fuel they put into the car. They either put in diesel or they either put in petrol. But, you know, so that's it. You would never put diesel into a petrol car and expect it to function. Yet in our bodies, we put in loads of crap in terms of sugar, in terms of lots of carbohydrates, hydrates, all of these various different things, and we expect ourselves to get up on time, to be in good form, to lose weight, to, you know, we expect ourselves to do all of these things. It's just not physically possible because our body doesn't have the right raw materials. So it's making sure that everything that you're eating is serving a purpose. It's functional, as opposed to it being just like, well.
Okay, so on average, I'm not going to quote you on this now,
okay,
but what should we be consuming on a daily basis?
So that's a really good question. I think definitely if you can try and break it down and look at things like fats, look at things like protein. So fats are things like, you know, we have omega-3 fats. So you're looking at things like salmon, you're looking at avocados. If you're taking them from plant sources, you're looking at avocados, you're looking at chia seeds, you're looking at walnuts, those kind of things. Also eggs are a really, really good source of fat and protein because they have loads of choline in them, which is really good for our brain.
God, I need a dozen eggs instantly.
So it's brilliant. Eggs are a really, really complete food, so they're very, very good. And the other side of that, in terms of protein, you're looking at things like obviously lean meats. So you're looking at chicken. If you can try as much as possible to go organic with chicken and organic with eggs, because you're getting less antibiotic residues and things like that from the chicken. And also you're looking at things like meat, just beef, pork. Again, look at the, if you're over consuming things like, you know, bacon and sausages and things like that, be very aware of like nitrates and salts and things like that. But generally speaking, absolutely fine. And then carbohydrates, you're looking at if you can go whole grain as much as possible. If you're celiac, then obviously you're going to go with a gluten-free grain. So gluten-free natural grains are things like brown rice, things like quinoa, things like millet, all of those kind of things. So again, be very aware of what you can consume and consume those in smaller portions. We do not need a huge amount of carbohydrates. Fill your plate up then with vegetables. So vegetables eat in abundance, particularly dark green leafy vegetables, because dark green leafy vegetables are loaded with magnesium, they're loaded with calcium, they're loaded with all of these really good carotenoids and flavonoids and things like that that are really beneficial for our health, basically antioxidants. So if you can get as much of those in as possible, it's really, really beneficial. And always try and eat the rainbow in terms of color. So looking at you know, orange foods, looking at purple foods, looking at green foods, looking at red foods, try and see if you can get it.
That's a very good tip.
Yeah,
I was thinking, what's purple? I love beetroot.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I love turnip.
And red cabbage and aubergine, all of those, absolutely. Because okay, every really single good. Different colour has a different nutrient for us.
Okay.
So it's the more that we consume, the more biodiverse our nutrition is.
Okay.
So
just for anybody listening, if you'd like to get involved or you have any questions for Orla, please send us a text 087-6944-500. On average,
okay,
I'm hearing a lot of this like intermittent fasting where you like have breakfast at 11 o'clock in the morning and then your last meal is at like 5 or 6.
Yes.
People said it's like a lot better because you're not eating straight away when you're up and, you know, your body's moving. I'm hearing so many different myths about different things.
Yes.
Ideally, I get up at like 7 a.m. every morning. I go to bed at probably between 9 and maybe 11.
Okay.
What should I be having like in that time frame?
So if you're the biggest thing I think with intermittent fasting is that it's really, really beneficial. There's a huge amount of research coming out now, particularly for that reducing that insulin resistance response. So looking at type 2 diabetes, for example. And it also depends if you're getting up in the morning and you're literally just putting sugar into your body straight away, then it's not ideal. So if you're getting up and you're having a sugary cereal, you know, that's not ideal in terms of breaking that fast and giving you the right nutrition. So it's looking at ways that if you are getting up in the morning and you're just having breakfast normally, can you put in something better in that situation? Can you put in eggs? Can you put in avocado? Those kind of things. So then if you're taking it one step further and you're actually going to fast for a little bit of period of time, the benefits that you'll find is if you do have to lose weight, you'll probably find that you'll lose weight a little bit quicker, but you'll also find cognitive clarity a little bit more as well. So you'll find your cognition will improve because your body is using, is really, really trying to... it's really, really helped to trying to burn that fat as well, which is great. So again, it would very much depend on your ability to do that. If it fits into your lifestyle, it can be very, very helpful. I would always say to people, it depends on what you're trying to achieve. There's various different ways of doing it. You can do the 12-hour, which I think is very, very easy for people. But you can also do like up to 16, 18 hours. Now, it's one of these things as well. People get a little bit afraid when they hear of intermittent fasting, but it's actually, fasting is a really, really old mechanism, and it's absolutely fantastic for our bodies, because I think we're told all of this time that, you know, we're in this constant consumption, even with social media and with technology. Yes, we're in constant consumption, but I think physically with foods, we're in this constant consumption and grazing and snacks and all this kind of thing. So our bodies are overloaded on a daily basis consistently. So it's really, really beneficial for the health of your body to give your body that time to kind of relax. A break, yeah, absolutely.
But so I love eating. I love cooking.
I know, and that's the hard thing.
And I love stuff. I try and make healthy snacks. I try kind of limit myself.
Yes.
I would consume quite a large amount of fruit.
Okay.
And I would probably, I do like avocados.
Yes.
But then I think, is it like too much sugar?
Depending. It depends on the, on your whole day, it depends on how many pieces of fruit you're having. Generally, it's like 2 pieces of fruit per day is sufficient. And then if you can try and get the rest in with vegetables because there's lower sugar in them. And again, be aware if you're having smoothies, if you're having like vegetable juices and those kind of things, because they all play
sugar.
A part. Sugar, absolutely, because they're into the system an awful lot quicker. They're in the bloodstream. So look at the way you're consuming your fruit, but generally 2 pieces of fruit per day is sufficient.
So what is the best way to monitor what you're consuming?
There's loads of various different apps out there, or you can go really old school and just write things down, but I think it's a really, really valid exercise whatever way you do it, because at number one, it connects you with what you're actually physically eating, and you can see, because you're more aware and you're more conscious of going, oh god, actually did I eat all of that yesterday? I didn't realise, because we're victims of unconscious eating. We're sitting in front of the TV and we're, you know, it's like
totally,
yeah, we've like
nachos,
two biscuits and
dips.
Then it's like, oh exactly, you don't
think the hummus is fine but the nachos aren't.
Well, that's the thing. So if you consciously write all that down, or use like, I like MyFitnessPal. It's a really, really good app. It's really simple to use. It's free.
So what is that app?
It's called MyFitnessPal.
Okay.
And literally you can just set it up and then you record everything. Now, it can be a little bit tedious in terms of having to record everything for like 3 to 4 days, but it's really, really good, and we're creatures of habit. So we tend to just be able to go in the next day and go, click, breakfast is the same, you know. So it gives you a breakdown. The biggest benefit is it gives you a breakdown of the macronutrients. So you can see then, oh God, I've actually had 50% carbohydrates today, or I've had 30% fat and I didn't realize, or I've had, you know, only 10% protein. And protein is one of those really, really important building blocks of all of our cells. So it gives you that awareness. It gives you that idea that you can kind of go, okay, I need to try and increase that. How do I go about doing that? So it gives you information. It gives you data that you can then use to further your health goals.
So it's helping you and it's
exactly
assisting you.
Exactly.
So what exactly should we completely avoid at all costs? What's a no-no?
A no-no is probably definitely the overconsumption of sugar. So you're looking at those like really, really quick processed sugars. So you're looking at cake, sweets, biscuits, treats. And I think that's prevalent now coming into like the Christmas period, dare I say.
But Orla, I love the rolling donuts. The Kinder Bueno is my favourite.
That's the thing. It's really, really hard. And once you're like, sugar is a very addictive substance. Very, very addictive. So once you remove it, you will have withdrawal symptoms.
But you know what? I was in Kildare Village last Sunday and there was a big queue at the Rolling Donut and they all looked amazing.
Mm.
And the queue was miles long. I felt like I was missing out on something. So I hopped on the queue and then I got to the counter and it was any donut and a coffee for €5.
Yes.
Hello?
I know.
Can I
exactly.
have 3 coffees and 3 donuts?
Absolutely.
So I got a donut.
Yeah.
Had a coffee. I ate it. It kind of looked a lot better than actually what it tasted.
Right.
And then afterwards, I felt physically sick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, the thing.
And I would have a sweet tooth, but I think it was just the whole build up to it. And then when it came along, I would kind of rush back into it now again.
Yes.
But it was good when I was eating it, but then I felt like crap after.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And that's another thing, if I can answer that question, is one of the biggest things I would ask people to avoid as well is eating whilst walking. It's a very simple thing, but you are not physically able to digest your food when you're in motion, because we have in our autonomic nervous system, we have 2 branches of it. One is called the sympathetic nervous system and the other is called the parasympathetic nervous system. So sympathetic nervous system is our fight or flight and parasympathetic is rest or digest. Various different chemicals are released during those processes, but when you're in fight or flight, basically digestion is shut down because it's way too long, it takes ages in our body. Reproduction is shut down, takes too long, it's a long term project, and skin repair is shut down. Takes too long. So you can imagine if you're running to the office and you're thinking about, oh God, I have a call now in a few minutes, I have to do this now and I'm trying to get this in, and you're shoveling food into you, your digestive system is shut down. It's not working. So therefore, the food that you're eating is just literally going to sit there. That's what can cause.
And you know, you see children doing it all the time.
All the time.
On lunch break,
breakfast
from schools.
Rolls,
chicken fillet roll.
Absolutely.
I was in Dublin City Centre, I think it was yesterday or on Tuesday. And I was sitting in Parnell Street and there's a big poster in the window in one of the shops, chicken fillet roll, €2.
Yes.
And I just thought, oh my God.
Yes. And then if
that
you want to buy, I know, but then if you want to buy something healthy, it's like, you know, €6, you know, so it, they I think they have it wrong.
So it does pay to be healthy and to consume healthy food.
It absolutely does. But that would be one thing I would always say. If you can try and sit down whilst you're eating and try and not be in that stress response, because if you can engage that parasympathetic nervous system, that rest and digest, it means that your body's in a calmer state and you're actually able to digest and absorb the nutrition from the food you're eating. Otherwise, it's just a pointless exercise.
One thing that we didn't touch on, just came into my head there, water consumption.
Yes.
How important is it?
Hugely important. Okay. So water is the biggest thing that I would always say to people is, if you think about your blood is liquid, obviously, and our blood is about 70% water, I think. So it's, if you're not consuming water, that blood becomes an awful lot more viscous and your heart has to work harder to pump a thicker liquid around the body. So again, it contributes, like dehydration will contribute to higher blood pressure, which has its own huge ramifications as well. But also in terms of just drinking water physically, it's really, really good for flushing out our toxins, for, you know, helping with the kidney filtration system, all of those things, hugely important. Now you can over consume water as well. So again, I think usually in and around 1.5 to 2 litres, it depends on your level of activity. If you're then putting activity on top of that, then you can go up to maybe 2.5 litres. But anything more than that, unless you're on medication that warrants it, anything more than that is not really necessary.
Okay. So for anybody listening, this all sounds like amazing and it's all just gone in one ear and half it's gone out the other because there's so much to
yes.
take in,
yes.
analyse, understand. What do you do?
So what I do is, I basically, to break it down, is I really, really help people figure out what's the right food for them, because there's so many different diets in the world and there's so many different things, but it's trying to figure out what suits your body at this point in time, because our bodies change every 7 years, our cells replicate and change. But it's really, really important to figure out what your environment is, if you're living in a very, very stressful environment, and to try and match that with foods that really, really work in terms of what your body requires. So do you need adrenal support? Do you need GI support, your gastrointestinal system? Do you need joint support? What is it that's kind of gone wrong, or is there like an imbalance there for you? So it's figuring that out and trying to also, I do a lot of work with testing. to figure out exactly what's wrong in the body. So is there a bad bacteria? Is there an overgrowth of candida? Is there an overgrowth of clostridia bacteria? Is there parasites via stool samples? All of these kind of things. So you can get a really good sense of the microbiology of what's happening in your body. Then you're in a better position to go, okay, I actually need to get rid of that. And that's why this is contributing to my symptoms of diarrhea, X, Y, and Z. So that really, really helps to give you a roadmap of what you need and the specific nutrition. You can get that specific. You can kind of go, I need very, very higher, like I need a lot more higher doses of B6 or B12, for example. Rather than having a multi-nutrient. So again, you can get quite specific, but those kind of things can be really, really helpful to figure out what foods you require. So I guess that's probably what I would try and help people with, is making sure that the food that they're eating is right for them.
Okay. So it says that you've had a massive success rate with past clients.
Right.
Can you give us an example of an amazing story?
So there was one kid that I did a lot of work with. He was diagnosed with autism and he did a 3-month program with me, and he already came to me with gluten and dairy removed from the system. And that saw really not a huge amount of benefit for the child. So then we went one step further and we did what was known as the organic acids test, and we figured out that he wasn't able to convert folate to methylfolate, for example. So we completely got rid of grains from the body. So that means any breads, any pastas, any corn, rice, all of those things, all being gluten-free as well, completely gone. And he made huge, huge strides in terms of behaviour, because he was he had very OCD tendencies, and he would always have to go to school with various different things, one being a little blanket. Another red bus blanket. And then he just woke up one morning and was just like, oh no, I don't need it. And his mum was like on the phone to me going, oh my god, that's amazing, like you don't know how huge that was for him, because he was obsessed with it. And there was various other different examples as well, but his behaviour, his eye contact improved hugely, his ability to process information. And I think that's one of the biggest things I would see on a daily basis with kids on the spectrum, is the ability to process, because we live in such an overwhelmingly stimulating world where everything can be hugely, you know, trying to process all of the information and everything else subconsciously. So that was huge for him. He was able to have conversations and be a part of a conversation and feel more engaged in his world.
That must feel amazing for you.
It was absolutely incredible. Like, he was such a great little kid, and to see him progress through, like, you know, being in the clinic and being like with tantrums and all of those kind of things, to coming in and being very, very calm and, you know, giving me a high five and looking me in the eye and being excited and, you know, being very engaged.
That sounds so powerful.
It was just amazing, yeah. And okay. He did so, so well. So it was incredible.
So for anybody listening, how can they get in touch with your wonderful self?
Thank you so much. So you'll find me on all the relevant social media, but Health by Orla is my handle. You'll find it on Facebook, you'll find me on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm not very active on Twitter, but you know, you'll find me on the others.
Where are you based, or where do you work from?
I'm based in Malahide and or Dundrum as well. So
so there's no excuse.
No excuse.
Okay. And they can get in touch there with you. And also,
absolutely.
You're on Instagram, Health by Orla.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
Okay, Orla, it's been a pleasure to have you in studio.
Thank you so much.
It's been a fantastic interview. Amazing. Full of knowledge. I'm going home now to have all the colours of the rainbow.
I love it. Amazing.
And probably a litre and a half, maybe two, all depending, of water.
Fantastic.
So, Orla, listen, thanks so much.
You're so
have
welcome.
A lovely weekend, and thanks again. Yeah.